Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords remains in critical condition after shooting. Our governor-elect Kitzhaber will begin his third term today. And there's a whole lot of weather on the way, maybe, sort of.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado... Beheed!
Yes.
For this... is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, January 10th, 2011.
Cranky.
John Kitzhaber will take the oath of office today to begin an unprecedented third term as governor of Oregon. After an eight-year hiatus from public life, Kitzhaber will take back the helm of a state in need of a boost. Oregon is reeling from joblessness with a budget deficit that will soon bring steep cuts in services on which residents rely.
Hooray! No, crap, no. I always get that wrong. Boo.
Kitzhaber has laid out lofty goals to transform the way government thinks and operates. He'll have to tackle a budget with a $3.5 billion shortfall. Also today, the new legislature will convene for the first time. It will be the first test of whether a tied House can collaborate to get anything done.
And penguins for everyone.
Really?
No.
Oh.
You are listening to Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. But it's nice that you believe me. That means that I have a promising future and career in politics.
Could we have penguins here?
Well, sure. Why not? I don't know where we'd really keep them. No. We tried to have, back when we were, I think when we were at KOTK, we tried to get, we were in the process of getting piranha. And we had the tank set up. We had the actual piranha themselves. A guy had reserved, I sound like Max Fisher, talking to a guy in South America. But we actually had, the full-on tank set up in the studio. It was ready to go. It was huge, too. It was like the length of that wall. We had a guy who had some piranha that he'd been breeding to sell. He was a listener. And so he was just going to, give us a couple just out of the goodness of his heart. And
as listeners do.
Right. And it was all, so we were ready to go. I mean, it was locked and loaded. And that was the day that, somebody from HR came over to visit for something entirely unrelated and said, what's that for? And I said, it's for fish, rather brightly, and I think a little too brightly. And she said, what kind of fish? And I said, I don't know what possessed me to do this. I just said, piranha. And she looked at the top and there was like no covering on the tank as such. And she said, does this tank have a lid? And I said, no, not really. And then that was the last thing I came back. It was just gone. I came back the next morning and there was just a big space where the piranha tank had once been. Somebody talked to somebody and my dreams were squashed, as is always the case at a radio station.
So, but was it your fish tank?
No.
It was my producer's at the time. But he had replaced it with, I think, a larger, like a bigger one, a more expansive tank at home. And so this was, he didn't need this one anymore. And you don't want to let a piranha tank go to waste.
I like the idea of piranha, but let's not get fish here. They take a lot of management.
Well, see, the thing is, the piranha, it really is literally a self-cleaning tank. You know what I mean? Because it's like anything, you know, because then you can just put in those fish that eat the algae, and then they themselves, render you, like, you know, you don't have to feed the extra
piranha. They're like the cactus of the fish world.
Sort of.
You just put them there and, you know, take care of them every once in a while, and never mind.
They're like those plants my grandmother had that just lived on air, allegedly. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, January 10th, 2011. Coming up later on this hour, entertainment news, science on the march, and more. Don't forget, you can get this program later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Arizona Representative Gabrielle Giffords was one of 18 people shot outside a Tucson, Arizona grocery store Saturday morning, where she was holding a constituent meeting. Giffords suffered a single gunshot wound through the brain. Although initial news reports indicated she died, the congresswoman survived and underwent surgery at the University Medical Center in Tucson. She remained in critical but stable condition today as her alleged would-be assassin prepared for his first day in court. Dr. Michael LaMole says she's been able to respond to some simple commands.
People come by an office or send a mail, and they're kind of said, oh, you
know. I'm sorry, what cut it? I'm sorry,
four.
What?
I'm sorry.
1, 2, 3, 4.
When I say someone follows simple commands, it could be showing us their thumb, perhaps two fingers, gripping a hand, wiggling toes.
Yeah, so I saw the interview with this guy this morning, and he said, it's one of those things, you realize that having broadband isn't really a substitute for going to medical school, because I'm like, wiggling her finger, big deal. And then he went on to, he had some chart where he was showing the brain, and he's like, and he was pointing out that that's linked to like all of the things you actually need to do to function as a human being. Like, if you can't wiggle your fingers, then I guess that does make sense, then you're kind of effed on everything else.
Yeah, she was shot through the left hemisphere of her brain with a 9mm, and your left hemisphere, it's kind of important for a whole lot of things. And doctors actually removed part of her skull during surgery to keep the brain from pressing against it as it swelled, but the bullet's front-to-back trajectory didn't do as much damage as a shot that crossed from one hemisphere to the other might have, they said. Dr. Peter Ree says 8 patients remain at Tucson's University Medical Center from Saturday's shooting.
When I say someone follows simple commands...
I'm sorry, that's me. This is cut... What?
5.
There's too much. There's too many clips on this. Let's see. Where did I put that clip number 5? You can see here...
After 4?
You can see that my brain function is... My brain function is leaving much to be desired at this very moment. I'll have to come back to it.
Okay.
I think I've conflated the two of these into one folder.
Well, in addition to Giffords, 7 other patients remain hospitalized. 5 of the patients are in serious condition, and 2 are in good condition. The shootings have sparked heated debate about the role of political rhetoric in the tragedy. Many on the left have pointed to the often belligerent language of the Tea Party, noting that Representative Gabrielle Giffords' Tucson office was vandalized after she supported the health care overhaul last year. They're also citing Sarah Palin's now infamous crosshairs map as evidence of out-of-control rhetoric on the right. But Tea Party members and the Republicans have naturally been swift to repudiate such accusations. They say gunman Jared Loughner was just plain crazy, and that Democrats are using the tragic events for political advantage.
By the way, that's awesome. I like the idea that they go right to the phrase, just plain crazy, which is sort of, I think there was a Gary Larson cartoon at one point. There was a Far Side where they were talking about, he was talking about the various psychiatric disorders and, you know, with accompanying visuals. And then there was, you know, and there was like depressed and anxious and nervous. And then there was one called just plain nuts. And it was like a guy with a shoe on his head holding a bazooka, which, by the way, does
which
appear
kind of sounds like this guy.
Yeah, like to be like an almost totally accurate representation of the shooting guy. Yeah.
An advisor to Ms. Palin, Rebecca Mansour, told the New York Times, I don't understand how anybody can be held responsible for somebody who is completely mentally stable like this. Palin's camp now claims that the marks on the map were not rifle sights, but surveyor's symbols.
Uh-huh.
But some, along with the light of, like, let's target these people.
This is going to be your surveying a list of people that you might want to kill?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben McGee taught one of Jared Loughner's classes in community college this past summer, and he says Loughner's behavior was so disturbing, McGee asked the administrators to remove Loughner from class. This is shooting 4.
2 times, at least. I think on the 3rd attempt, he had said something about the Constitution, like violating his First Amendment rights.
This is, by the way, this is actually now is this a teacher that we're hearing from right
yes.
now? So this is, I guess, then the third teacher I have heard interviewed or seen interviewed over the last couple of days that said that, I guess the guy just had like the one, he just had the one dictograph belt going in his head all the time about the Constitution. Because the I saw a professor interviewed this morning, said that like the second day in her class, he did the same thing. She called, she said like, you know, do you have your homework? And he said, well, I'm still working on it. And she said, well, it was due this morning. And he, you're violating my rights! And immediately, I've got a gun! And went right to the whole, like...
Jesus.
Yeah, he was... Yeah, he was apparently tipped over at a pretty in a pretty specific way at an early age.
Well, I haven't seen any of the videos he made, but I read transcripts.
Oh, they're
crazy. I read the transcripts of the stuff he said
they
in
are
the videos.
Full on nuts.
Yeah.
He was touched by something very special, and by touched by something I mean kicked in the head. I think.
McGee, who says Loeffner, he says that Loeffner was disruptive on the first day of class.
Five?
Yeah.
Not every class, just the first day of class. And then the rest of the days, he was very quiet and just kind of isolated and
kept to
in his own little world.
Yeah.
McGee says he had to go to officials three times before they finally ejected him from the class this past summer.
Dean had to do it by force along with the police officer.
Oh, yes. Wow.
Yeah, so it's a, I guess that it, and it's funny, but did you read the emails that from a student of his or a classmate?
No.
So there's, because a lot of times, you know, you see these interviews and it's like, and you think to yourself, you know, when somebody is sort of interviewed about a guy like this, you figure that they are probably just, they are selectively remembering, you know, whatever it is that, you know, they're selectively remembering things about the guy to fit what they now know about him. So they say, hey, so-and-so was arrested for being crazy. And they think back like, oh, he really did seem kind of crazy, you know, and then you just don't know if it's an accurate representation or not. The best thing about this is they dug up these emails from a classmate of the guy's from like a year and a half ago. And she's like, you know, she's like, dear mom, sitting in class next to a crazy guy, he keeps standing up and screaming. We're all terrified of him. And then at one point she actually says in this letter of like a year or so ago, so she says, he's exactly like one of those guys you'll eventually see on the news wielding an automatic weapon and taking a school hostage. And, you know, so clearly the crazy was not very well disguised.
Well, moving on to other things, the scattered flakes falling in Portland and Vancouver today are just a teaser of what's to come. KGW's meteorologist Nick Allard said, Tuesday it gets active, so here we go.
Is this the mighty 3 inches of snow we might be getting?
It could
be. That'll bring life to a standstill?
It could be a mighty 4 inches, Rick Emerson. 4 inches, maybe.
If you listen really carefully, you can hear the rest of the world laughing at us.
Yeah. Now, you realize, of course, that when they tell us these things are going to happen, most of the time they don't because they're just guessing.
Right.
But at any rate, the National Weather Service is saying that there's winter storm watches for the Portland and Vancouver areas. And there should be snow and freezing rain through Tuesday night. And then on Wednesday, it might be one of those things where you turn on the news and there's apparently nothing will have happened in the entire world except that we got 4 inches of snow.
And I mean, really, you know, when you think about it, it's just going to be the same thing it always is. It's going to be water falling out of the sky in one form or another. So at this point, you really ought to be used to that. I'm just saying. It seems like a thing that we could, you know, we could suss out how to drive.
This last time it snowed, though, honestly, it seemed like the news media here in town really did ratchet it back a little bit. Because the time before that, when it was just like snowpocalypse, everything's coming to an end, and now they're all on Twitter, and they were saying, what do you think about the coverage of the snow? And they were just roundly chastised by hundreds of people that they're idiots for constantly focusing on the snow as if it's the end of the world.
Right.
And honestly, so this last time there was snow, it seemed to be a little bit less hysterical.
Well, and plus, I mean, and here's the other thing about that is, like, the great thing about that 2008, about that whole, and by the way, let me just say, like, for the record, I was the first person that anybody, you know, here in Portland ever heard say snowpocalypse. That was a thing that I'm telling you right now. I'm not going to say I'm not going to say I invented it as such or that I'm the first person in the world to use it. I'm not going to say that it's, you know, that I am the first person in the media in general. But I will tell you this, we were the first media outlet in Portland to say snowpocalypse. By the way, that is after, I believe Dave Schmidtke wanted to call it snowgasm, and we decided that sounded a little unpleasant.
I tried calling it snow crap terribleness. But it didn't catch on.
You know what also didn't catch on is the next year we tried calling it the hotpocalypse during the summer. And I still think that that was a term that didn't really get its fair due of respect.
No, that could have been good.
Hotpocalypse really is a thing. It just rolls off the tongue so easily, and it's full of sharp-cornered consonant sounds.
It is.
But the thing about it is that in 2008, the great thing about that is that it brought into stark relief like all of the winter coverage they do every year when, as you said, there's half an inch of snow. And where it's like, oh, are schools going to be closed? You know, and it's like our friend, Seamus, who basically lives, I mean, like he just lives in the side of like a snow-covered, you know, mountain range all the time where they get like 8 and 10 and 12 and 17 inches of snow and it just stays there for months on end.
He's a bumble, isn't he?
He really is. And so that's like, you know, that's actual snow. And so every year when everybody just gets their panties in a wad about the fact that there's, you know, a few frozen flakes of water falling out of the sky, it was as though the universe just decided to give us a sense of perspective on things. So that 2008 was like the snow hammer just came down like nobody's business. And as a result, the next year, I think they realized just how ridiculous and ludicrous it would have sounded if they had just started running around shrieking, the first time that there was like any sort of fluttering of flakes coming down.
Well, speaking of actual real winter weather, the South is going to be getting a huge corn?
They're going to be getting a huge corn.
It's getting corn.
And a Jobin as well.
Yeah. Let's call it a storm, instead. That's going to be covering the region with heavy ice and snow. Governors of Alabama, Georgia, and Louisiana have declared states of emergency, and officials are warning residents not to try navigating the icy roads. Meanwhile, hundreds of flights out of Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport have been grounded. The storm picked up speed on Sunday evening, blanketing Tennessee, Alabama, and Georgia with snow. The weather system is saving its worst for Mississippi and northern Louisiana, however.
They're getting a lot of beets there.
Yes.
Why did you say corn?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I was going to say storm covers, and I said corn.
even like transposition wouldn't really explain that. That's like you transpose them and then also rearrange the actual internal order of the letters.
Well, I probably started to say corm, and then my brain thought, that's not a word.
No,
say corn.
And so you did an autocorrect. Your brain on the fly went, go to something that looks like a word, land somewhere familiar.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So the National Weather Service has warned of storm conditions stretching from East Texas to the Carolinas. Christopher White, AirTran's Director of Public Relations, gives details as to why their airline is canceling all flights today.
We've decided to cancel all of our flights into and out of Hartsfield. It's really for two reasons. One, the safety of our crew members and of our passengers and customers. The other reason is so we can be better prepared to get back to a normal operation tomorrow.
See, now that at least you could say that there really is the element of surprise happening there, because you don't think of Texas as being a place that gets blanketed with a lot of winter weather.
No, not, well, I mean, parts of Texas, but yeah, they don't generally have to close down their airports. White says the decision is the first such cancellation in 10 years.
The last time we had total cancellation of Atlanta and every other airport for that matter was on 9/11. It's been quite a few years, fortunately.
And by the way, I got to say that I feel because it's so totally and completely gypped by all of this, because the East Coast just gets, I mean, they just got pounded with snow for like 2, 3, 4 weeks or whatever, and just closed New York. The South, goddamn Texas, is getting snow. And then meanwhile here, it's like the snow is just, we're the hole in the middle of the snow donut, and it's just falling everywhere around us. And I feel so totally, I don't even remember getting snow last year. I know that it's not like in Beaverton, you know, and like up on the hill and other places, that don't matter to me because I don't live there. There was no snow last year for Christmas, no snow this year for Christmas or for any of the surrounding time. My life is incomplete because of it. So I'm carrying a little bit of bitterness about that.
Look forward to Wednesday then, in the off chance that there actually is 4 inches of snow here on the ground.
I'm not going to get my hopes up because if it doesn't happen to me, I'm all sad and disappointed.
An estimated 500 Cal State Los Angeles students mistakenly received letters from the school saying they had been academically disqualified from returning for the winter quarter. Even though the students were on academic probation, school officials say they should not have received disqualification letters. The letters were sent out by the registrar's office just after Christmas and told students that their fall 2010 grade point averages and overall GPAs fell below university standards for continued enrollment. The mistake stems from a mailing label code error. Apparently, 164 students who were supposed to get disqualification letters received them, but by mistake, an additional 500 probationary students received them as well. Officials say the registrar's office realized the mix-up when upset students began calling to disagree with the disqualifications.
By the way, you are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, which is also available on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, the Rick Emerson radio program for the week of January 10th, 2011 broadcast. Coming up next hour, we have Pop Culture Authority. We also have Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian who will be joining us, and we'll do the top five. I think that we prepared for last Friday. For reasons that elude me now, we didn't get to it. I think we were just massively over time. That might have been why. There was some reason last Friday that we didn't get to the top five. That was
prepared. It's the same one you didn't get to. No, we got one on Friday.
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
Yeah.
We were Jim Malig was here, but we ended up not getting to that top five, and I don't know why. Yeah. So that is coming up next hour, as well as a corpse watch that is coming up. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm.
The recent mass death. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's do science.
Here's your science for Monday, January 10th, 2011.
The recent mass deaths of birds, fish, crabs, manatees, penguins, and other animals are now being tracked by Google Maps.
You're just being alarmist.
A flocalypse, as the Washington Post and other news outlets are calling the bird die-offs.
It's fantastic.
Can now be studied along with the other animal deaths online at a single Google webpage.
Really? So is it like a map? Does it make it like a happy little binging sound every time something goes extinct?
Yes.
The titmouse. Ding.
The events appear to all date from December 2010 to the present, likely a choice of the map's creators, since previous events could have also been documented. The majority of the events are shown to have occurred in the United States, but the map also takes note of 100 tons of dead fish in South America, hundreds of snapper that perished in New Zealand, thousands of fish that were found floating dead in the Philippines, 150 tons of red tilapias who died in Thailand, scores of dead fish in Haiti, 50 to 100 jackdaws dead in Norway, and over 300 doves dead in Italy. The question has been asked, why are animals dying off in biblical proportions? Scott Wright, branch chief of disease investigations at the USGS National Wildlife Health Center, said that on WNYC radio program that it's pretty common and die-offs occur all the time. Nonetheless, Wright and other experts are holding that the incidents are not related. Much of the interest it suspects is due to our increased attention to such news following the unusual deaths of 5,000 red-winged blackbirds on New Year's Eve in Arkansas, which the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission blames on fireworks. Of course, fireworks weren't going off when 40,000 dead crabs were found in the UK, or when 2 million fish washed up dead on the shores of Chesapeake Bay, Maryland. Experts are blaming those particular events on cold weather.
Or maybe there's just like a, I don't know, do you ever just like, maybe there's sort of a, you know, like a corvair of the animal world that just rolls off the assembly line, and it's just been put together badly. You know, like there's just some sort of a diode, some glitch that's been, you know, and it's been it's got some sort of, like, do you ever get a vacuum cleaner and you take it home and you plug it in and like a day and a half later it explodes and you turn on the news and it just, you know, it's just some guy, you know, overslept and got to the factory late and put the wrong capacitor into the wrong thing. And so there's 10,000 vacuum cleaners made that day and they're, you know, and they have to recall them all. Maybe this is how nature recalls vacuums or automobiles. It just sort of, you know.
This is just like the universe saying, oh, jackdaws are faulty.
Yeah, well, it's like the remote kill button that, you know, lives in Bill Gates' house, you know, where he just decides that, you know, he's tired of something working and he presses the button and it just deactivates wherever it is.
Do you think he has robot dogs with laser eyes?
I think he does.
Do I think he has
robot dogs with laser eyes? You are so 2008. Mm. By the way, this text message just says, tell Don to make me a cookie.
What?
Somebody just sent a message. Just tell Don to make me a cookie.
One cookie?
Yeah, just one.
Okay.
His username is doing you in the butt.
One.
That's not actually happening. I'm saying that is the name by which he is identified. I'm not saying you're being assaulted by his username.
Not making him a cookie now. Not with a name like that.
Ha-ha! In your face, butt guy. Here's Don Taylor.
Scientists say the Earth's magnetic north pole is moving, so officials at Tampa International Airport are relabeling its main runway to reflect the change. The runway redesignation project will change all existing numbers on all three runways. The runway has been labeled on aviation charts as 18R/36L, indicating its location along the 180-degree approach from the north and the 360-degree approach from the south. It will become 19R/1L. The change was required by the Federal Aviation Administration to account for a gradual shift of the Earth's magnetic pole at nearly 40 miles a year towards Russia. It's being caused by magnetic changes at the planet's core. The Earth's magnetic field is what makes runways work, including those used by pilots.
So here's a fun fact. So every 100 million years, the Earth's magnetism just reverses, which is what this is. You're just seeing a little incremental change, but every 100 years, the polarity of the Earth's magnetism completely reverses, and that's an average, and sometimes it's happened in far shorter periods of time. Sometimes it takes a lot longer, and they have no explanation as to why, as to how it happens, as to what triggers the habit. I mean, they know it happens in the core, but beyond that, there's just no sussing it out. And Which is interesting to know because, of course, it's the planet's magnetism that keeps, you know, it's the planet's magnetism that keeps radiation from outer space from being filtered out. That filters it out and keeps it from just, you know, tearing your DNA into tiny little shreds. So at some point in the, you know, probably not foreseeable future, everything in, you know, on Earth that relies on that will be removed.
Well, if it's happening at the Earth's core, then it's probably caused by the mole men.
No, they're busy. They're busy with that blonde chick. What is her name? Weena.
People love music for much the same reason they're drawn to sex, drugs, gambling, and delicious food, according to new research.
Let's back up for a second. The mole men. Was that the time machine reference?
Or just Attack of the Mole Men? Any of your mole men lore will do. We all know there are mole men.
No, because there's two different things. You could be talking about the time machine, and that's what I was going the time machine Morlock Weena route, and where they were drinking everything out of those strange Tupperware tumblers too, and where Weena spent a lot. And what kind of a name is Weena anyway? But Weena spent a lot of time just eating those giant strawberry things.
Yeah,
it's the weirdest movie. I thought you might be going the Maximus and Minimus mole route. The villains that plagued Superman occasionally.
No, it was more of an Attack of the Mole Man thing about the 1950s movie where the people tunneled down in and discovered the underground.
I don't think I'm familiar with that.
Of the mole people.
Sort of like an underground cache of albino supervillains.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, they were pretty useless as villains, really.
By the way, Juggalo John wants it known that Snowhammer is his albino friend's porn name. Just FYI, right. In case you should be quizzed on that later in Cash Cab.
So this research says people like music because of the same reason they like other things that they like.
They like stuff that's cool and they don't like stuff that sucks.
Right.
Okay.
When you listen to tunes that move you, the study found...
Tunes that move you, really?
Tunes that move you.
Says this study from 1978.
When you're rocking to your tunes...
To groovy tunes, Don.
Your brain releases dopamine, a chemical involved in both motivation and addiction. Even just anticipating the sounds of a composition like Vivaldi's Four Seasons or Fish's You Enjoy Myself...
As I often do.
...can get the feel-good chemical flowing and make you feel groovy. Found this study, which was the first to make a concrete link between dopamine release and musical pleasure. The findings offer a biological explanation for why music has been such a major part of major emotional events in cultures around the world since the beginning of human history. Through music, the study also offers new insights as to how the human pleasure system works. You're following the music and anticipate what's going to come next and whether it's going to confirm or surprise you. And all these little cognitive nuances are what's giving you amazing pleasure, said Valerie Salimpour, a neuroscientist at McGill University in Montreal. The reinforcement or reward happens almost entirely because of dopamine. So there you go. Music, you like music, it's dopamine. Okay. Science.
I don't know. There's something weird about today's news. I don't know whether today's news all seems strangely. It's like we're getting some sort of diet version of the news today. These stories seem like they ought to be compelling or entertaining, and there's just not a lot there once you get past the first sentence or two.
Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm not delivering it with the right amount of glee. I was a little down this weekend. Maybe you can hear it in my voice. Maybe I'm not bringing the right amount of enthusiasm to the news this week.
No, I think it's just the actual content of that story. So the content of the story you just said, what they're basically saying is, they're saying that if you think about something, that it can have a pleasurable effect, not equivalent to, but, you know, approaching the level of actually doing the thing, which, of course, is not a big surprise. I think everybody knows. I mean, otherwise, why would, you know, it's why guys sit and think about how they want to bonk the chick in accounting.
It's another one of those really basically just butt-stupid research studies. Yes, that is an actual scientific term.
Is that a Don? Did you just make that up now, or is that a Don Taylor original that you've used for some time, describing things as being butt stupid?
I don't know where that came from. It just.
Have you ever said that before? I mean, to the best of your knowledge,
pretty sure I have.
Well, that's just a butt stupid idea.
Yeah, I probably have.
Okay.
But anyway, it's another one of those just sort of painfully obvious research studies that we get here on the news desk every once in a while. That it's like, you know. The reason things make you happy is because dopamine makes you happy. You like music because you like stuff. So, yeah.
Butt stupid. That's a specific kind of dumb, really.
Yeah.
I can't quantify it, but I can sort of wrap my mind about what kind of idiocy is described by that phrase.
That's one of those phrases that probably is stuck in my head from growing up in Southern California. It's probably one of those idiotic regional phrases.
Hey, here's the thing.
Like gnarly.
When did we pass some sort of evolutionary line of linguistics about 10 years ago? When did we start describing things as tasting like ass? That's not a thing we did when I was a kid.
No.
What's it taste like? It tastes like ass.
That's fairly new.
That is a thing that one guy somewhere started, and then it just sort of spread virally, like 100th Monkey style, and then now we're all saying it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know who it is. Who's the patient zero of the taste like ass linguistic phenomenon?
It is quite evocative, though.
It really is. And the thing is, it's a thing that is, you know, almost certainly true in a figurative sense. You know, you don't really know what they mean by it, but at the same time, you know exactly what they mean by it.
I had a friend once. He described a woman he knew as smelling like butt whiff.
Okay, see, here's the thing. I've heard a guy say, well, he's there with his butt-faced girlfriend. And it's like, I don't know what that means, but at the same time, I know exactly what that means.
Yeah.
Okay. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program featuring Corpse Watch. Mr. Ryan White from The Oregonian will be here as well. We'll also have the top five from November 5th, 1986, I believe. Either 88 or 86.
Oh, I know why we didn't do this on Friday.
Because it's horrible?
Because it's horrible.
Because it's repellent in every way?
Because you keep going to the 80s for your top fives, and it just makes me want to dive across the table and throttle you.
Blame the fickle finger of fate, Don. By the way, which I keep in a box at home.
Mm-hmm.
So, November 5th, 1988, that is coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Oh, we also have a penis watch and a clergy watch.
Really?
Yes.
Awesome.
I just didn't put them on the board yet.
So that's all on the way next hour. You are listening to Legion of News. Here is Don Taylor.
We're done with science.
There we go. There's your science on the march for January 10th. 2011, that is what it is. We want to remind you that Science of the March, like the rest of this program, is brought to you by a series of fine business partners, including Squires Electric. You can find out more about Squires Electric by going to 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. You can contact them online as well at SquiresElectric.com. They've been in Portland for, here's the thing about Squires Electric. First of all, I noticed that Donna is, I saw Donna this morning. She is resplendent in her, ducks. She's wearing something because apparently the big game is happening today.
Yes, there is a sporting event of some sort happening today.
Can you describe in any way the nature of the big game?
I believe it has something to do with the BCS.
What is that?
That is the Bowl Championship Series, which I was asking Big Jim Willig about on Friday, because in a lifetime of hearing about bowl games every year, never until this season did I hear it referred to as the BCS.
Here's the weird thing about that is that I had the same conversation this morning with Greg Nibbler, because he said, because they were, you know, Sarah and Greg were here earlier this morning, they were taping, and they were, and they know that I don't follow the sports. And Sarah said, sort of mockingly, are you ready for the big game today? And just to see the blank expression on my face, and I did the slow, like, Homer blink. And she said, you know what I'm talking about, do you? And I said, no. And she said, Greg, you know, and she summoned Greg in to fill in the gaps in my pop culture knowledge. I had no concept of what it was. But I guess it's a confluence of events that led to this year, because it's Oregon State and Auburn. So I think, as opposed to the Civil War, which happens every year, this just sort of ended up being those two teams, which is why everybody sort of cares about it. Because I am old enough to remember the fact that there used to be all of this consternation every year that there was no way to discern which college team was the best. There was never, because there was all of these various tiers of bowl games, but there was no way to determine, to quantify which team actually was the champion, which is, I guess, what this is.
Oh, okay. And so this is a fairly new...
I believe it is a relatively recent development in the world of college football. Mm. So that being said, I'm just reciting a bunch of stuff that Greg said to me. So, you know, he could have been effing with me. I have no idea.
So, yes. So I thought about mentioning that in the news, and then I realized that we would both just look like fools once we started talking about football.
No, see, the thing
is... And I figured if people care about football, they already know about it.
The thing is that I have set no expectation that I will ever know what I'm talking about in terms of sports. So it's not like I'm setting something up and then failing to deliver on it. I'm delivering, by looking foolish and ignorant in the world of sports, I am delivering exactly what the people have come to expect. In any event, you can contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 if you are going to be building a structure, if you're going to be remodeling, if you're going to be repairing, if you're going to be expanding your business. You want to make sure that the wiring system is taken care of right, and it's done right the first time, so you don't have to get it repaired. You don't have to get it fixed in the future. You don't have to expand it. You're going to have it set so it meets your needs and so it functions all the way through the winter and beyond. It's 503-252-1609, or you can go to SquiresElectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors, installers, and supervisors, and fine folk as well. Squires Electric. Here is Don Taylor.
Two people in Vancouver went to the hospital Sunday following a crash involving a wrong-way driver and a fuel tanker truck. Vancouver police said about 5:40 a.m., the driver of the car was headed in the wrong direction down Washington Street, which is a one-way only street. A tanker truck hit the car as it crossed the intersection at West 15th Street. The tanker truck was empty at the time. Emergency responders rushed the car's passenger, a 22-year-old man, to Southwest Washington Medical Center with serious injuries. The driver of the car, a 30-year-old woman, sustained minor injuries in the crash and was taken to the hospital. Police said the car's driver has a suspended license, but is cooperating with the investigation. Officers also noted that alcohol was a factor in the crash.
By the way, that thing I just said about how I deliver exactly what the people expect, that includes just an unbelievable void in my head where sports knowledge typically would be, such as apparently saying it was Oregon State in the BCS. It's not. It's Oregon, I guess. Oregon, not Oregon State. Follow by this guy who just says, effing Christ, after correcting me. So, thanks. Sorry about that.
Here's what I know. I know that the orange ones are the Beavers, and they're in Corvallis. And I know this because my husband's company is based in Corvallis, and they have to wear orange shirts. And I didn't know why their shirts were orange. And then finally, after he worked there about 5 years, I finally made the connection that they're based in Corvallis, and the Beavers' colors are orange.
Is that just one of those things that it's unspoken but understood at the workplace, that you will wear orange? There is no question about that.
No, they are issued company shirts that have the company name on them, and these shirts come from Land's End, and they're polo shirts, and they are orange.
We should just issue some sort of an edict that people have to wear clown shoes. You know what I mean?
We could do that.
Have to get like notched eyebrows, like Vanilla Ice or something.
And I also know that the ducks are the green ones, the green and yellow ones, because I see people with those signs on their cars all the time. And that very, very angry looking Donald Duck, which I guess is some kind of a licensing agreement with Disney, since it's very obviously Donald Duck.
More intriguing to me is the fact that they had to pay, I don't know, like $3 million or something to get that O designed.
Really?
Yeah, that's called being horked.
Wow,
friends.
Yeah.
Just FYI. Incidentally, we were talking about the snow hammer, which may be dropping on Portland. See, that's a thing nobody uses. We should, except for apparently this albino porn star.
Snow hammer.
We should totally, you know, the Portland snow hammer. And then you just get, you know, like one of the Dave Zielinski guys out there to sort of, you know, like, as you can see, and, you know, and to point at the sky. Somebody says he's comparing this to Florida. And Florida's always a good control group for insanity. He says, you would not believe it here in Florida, even when a potential hurricane is brewing, there is a takeover of the airwaves with constant distracting crawling updates, terms like cone of death, and slick computer animations of what your house will look like as its roof is being torn off. How great is that?
Aww.
They should totally do that here. They should do like a CGI of, you know, of what you will look like as an avalanche of snow comes and whisks your family away down a hill into a ravine somewhere.
Or just like a kind of a graphic with giant killer snowmen marching towards the town to illustrate that the storm front is coming in.
Or just an angry god hurling bolts of lightning and torrents of ice at your home, you know? Like maybe sort of a... Well, because there's Zeus, and so Zeus is he's responsible for lightning. Is there a god who's responsible for, or just like a generally damp feeling?
Probably. A sweaty, moist god.
Ted, the god of moistness. Okay.
A Massachusetts man disappointed in the Brattle Theater screening of The Sound of Music was arrested after allegedly smashing all the items in the lobby's concession stand, including a cash register. On January 5th at 7:41 p.m., police were called to the scene on a report of a fight at the Brattle Theater in Harvard Square. Upon arrival, it was learned that the man, identified as Cambridge resident Michael Harrington, 56, had smashed all of the items in the concession stand in the lobby.
When you say theater, is this like
a movie theater.
Stage play or a movie theater?
No, it's a movie theater.
What's to be How could you possibly be disappointed in what... How would it not be exactly what you expect it to be if you go to see the film The Sound of Music in the theater?
Well, they were showing the movie as part of the 75th anniversary of 20th Century Fox, and...
The mechanical shark didn't appear?
Apparently he became angry when the movie became blurry after about 5 minutes.
Oh, I see.
It went out of focus.
Okay.
So, yeah, so he damaged the cash register, valued about $1,000. And smashed everything.
Okay, that is frustrating, by the way, when you're there and it's like, and there's that thing now, the automated movie theater where they don't have projectionists in a lot of those booths, and you're sitting there and the movie goes out of focus, or like, or it will be like way too loud or sometimes too quiet, and clearly there's just no one paying attention to it whatsoever. And then there's that whole unspoken thing in the theater where you're all thinking the same thing, which is, which one of us is going to get up and go out and find some guy to make him go up and fix it? And so, you know, and then, God forbid, see here, maybe it was this. Maybe he was there with somebody who had never seen The Sound of Music, and then the experience was being ruined.
Yeah.
Not unlike that time that Scott Daly's girlfriend, Lily, who had never seen West Side Story, decided that the best place to see West Side Story was at Bobby Roberts' house during a drunken commentary. You know, that was the thing that Scott told her, baby, it'll be a fine way to experience this movie for the first time. You'll be able to see it in a charming atmosphere, completely unsullied by loud screams and homophobic slurs. That, by the way, was not the situation as it ultimately developed. And I think at one point she just went out to the car under the theory that she was like looking for a nail file and just didn't return.
There are a few things more frustrating, by the way, than watching a movie at someone else's house. And I won't say who's that, Bobby Roberts, where it's like he's got his whole home theater set up with the giant screen and the sound, and it's awesome. And you're in a room full of people, and there are people who just won't shut up.
Yes.
But you're at someone else's house.
You can't bring down
as a guest, so you
the
can't.
The smack.
Yeah, it's not like when you're in public and you've paid money for a ticket and you can turn around and go, shut the F up!
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can't do that at someone else's
house. And to be fair, in Bobby's defense, he actually at one point did, like, he actually, I think, did stop the film, and he just gave everybody, and by everybody, I mean Scott, because that was the irony, is that Scott, I don't mean to pick on Scott Daly, but he had brought his girlfriend because she'd never seen his, you know, West Side Story, which is certainly an important film. I mean, it's a notable film, and she'd never seen it, and he thought, well, this will be great, baby. And then I think he just got like a bottle of Captain Morgan's or something, and just anyway. So I think Bobby actually had to bring everything to a conclusion at one point, and issue some stern edicts and threaten the eviction of several people if they didn't shut it.
And I will also say that Bobby was none too happy with all of the chatter at the movie that I was at either, you know. But there wasn't much he could do about it because some of it was his girlfriend.
Well, because otherwise it's like you have no choice. You got to get your the only way is to get your William Castle on and just have those seats wired with something. You know what I mean? And a guy just runs his chops too many times, and you just hit a button, and suddenly, you know, he gets that jab right in the ass.
See, now that I have this giant TV in my house, at some point I'll probably have to invite people over to watch things, and they'll talk, and I'll have to figure out how angry to be.
You should just take out a gun and just have it sitting on your lap, and then occasionally just stare at someone.
Or just give them the talk ahead of time.
Yeah.
All right. Now, we don't talk in the movie, or we whisper quietly to our seatmate.
Yeah, this is why I don't go to the movies anymore. I just can't. I just can't, you know, because they frown on you. I'm just going to tell you this. In some alternate reality... never mind. You know, we're getting off into a whole thing here.
I'll say one of the great things about being a professional film critic, though, is that if people are really horribly bad and there's a publicist there who is worth their salt, you can go up to them and go, they're not being right. Get rid of them. Make them stop. And they'll get to tell them to shut up. So
yeah, there is.
I'm here doing my job, and I'm throwing a diva fit. Make them stop.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour in the Rick Emerson Radio Program, Ryan White from the Oregonian will be here. Also, Clergy Watch, Penis Watch, Corpse Watch, and the Top 5. Here is Don Taylor.
When you don't agree with an organization that you never chose to join in the first place, the healthiest thing to do is to leave, Damian Spleeter says of his decision to be de-baptized.
Damian Spleeter.
Damian Spleeter.
Please to spell.
S-P-L-E-E-T-E-R-S.
That's a great name.
Spleeters. Angered by sex abuse scandals in church conservatism, a growing number of Belgians are demanding to be debaptized and removed from the Catholic Church's baptism register. Once debaptized, people are no longer allowed to get married or buried in Catholic ceremonies. While there are a few hard numbers about how many people are making the move, a recent opinion poll found that only 8% of Belgians have confidence in the Catholic Church. Excuse me. A 20% drop from October 2009, and baptism opponents say they're picking up the slack. Daniel Leclerc, a member of the group Friends of Secular Morality, said, in 2010, we worked on 1,700 cases compared to 380 in 2009 and only 66 in 2008. The church, however, has downplayed the trend as overblown, saying the majority of Belgians still follow traditional Catholic practices. Whilst we deplore your decision, Abbot Jean-Pierre Lorette wrote in a response to Spleeter's request, the Catholic Church respects each individual's freedom and will not hold back against their will those who wish to leave it.
Also, another news, Mr. Spleeter is wasting his life. So just
being de-baptized?
FYI. Yeah, seriously. You know how I deal with the Catholic Church? It bothering me? I don't go to Catholic Church anymore. End. Sort of a one-step solution.
But I guess if you've believed all along that the magical baptizing thing has made you a Catholic and the sprinkling of the water and everything means that you are a member of this thing, that I guess it is all superstitious anyway. So now you have to go through. It's like walking around somebody three times and saying, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you. I mean, I guess you have to have a ritual to diffuse the original ritual.
It seems like both of those things can't be true. You can't think the Catholic Church is full of it and at the same time think that you have to be debaptized because the water has some magical power.
Well, yeah.
It seems, you know what I'm saying? That's a fundamentally paradoxical position.
But you could be angry at the things that the Catholic Church is doing, but still believe that you were consecrated when you went through the ritual.
No, because if you're believing you're consecrated, because you either believe that the church is accurate or the church is inaccurate. In other words, if the church is behaving in contradiction with the Bible, or if they're acting in contradiction with their own beliefs, then you have to believe that the church is therefore irrevocably flawed. I mean, because the Catholic Church is a very binary religion in that they speak and act for God. So if they are, it's an all or nothing proposition with them. You either believe the church is completely infallible or you believe the church is completely effed. And if you think the church is completely effed, then by definition, they are effed across the board, which means they are effed about the efficacy of baptism. Catholics have no idea how their own religion works. Even people, especially people who disparage the Catholic Church, have no idea what the hell they are talking about. I'm not saying the Catholic Church isn't effed. It is. I'm just saying if you ask people to describe the ways in which it is effed, they are wrong, uniformly, always, without exception. So, seriously, just sleep in on Sundays and just give us a rest. I mean, for the love of God. I mean, would you waste your time being debaptized?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying that growing up as I did in a family of fallen Catholics and having grown up around a lot of Catholics, I don't know. I mean, I can buy the fact that someone might be angry at the behavior of people within the church and the politics and the sex scandals and such and the conservative attitude of the church itself, but still believe in God and the ritual and baptism and all of that stuff. And so making the decision that you want to, like, extract yourself from the church, but feeling you have to, like, I don't know, perform a ritual to undo the original ritual. I mean, I can understand it. I mean, yes, I realize that it's all crazy, but I can understand it.
Okay. Yeah, the whole thing just makes me tired, and I don't care. All right, here's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
The Chevy Volt wins Car of the Year honors at the North American International Auto Show in Detroit. Volt engineer Pamela Fletcher says the car is winning over converts, even among those who were initially leery of the battery technology.
We couldn't be more thrilled. You know, certainly the feedback, attention we're getting through all of the awards, literally a clean sweep of the major awards the Volt has received. And secondly, you know, and probably even more importantly, the great feedback that we are receiving from our early consumers.
By the way, I found out I had asked that question when I went to a Provo a couple weeks ago. We got some rental car, and it's that thing where it's like, have you noticed that they don't even ask you anymore if you want something that is, you know, it's like a hybrid or a flex or whatever. They just sort of give it to you under the assumption that you want it. And so they gave us this car with, like, flex fuel, and it had a picture of it. And you can tell it's nonsense because it's flex fuel with, like, a little, like, TM or, like, a trademark thing next to it. And then it's just a picture of a green leaf, like, painted on the back of the car. And so you immediately know that you're just dealing with some sort of scam. But I was like, what the hell is flex fuel? And so everybody, including Thomas Kill, who's from, he's from Michigan. So he grew up in the shadow of the auto industry. But several people emailed, like, these explanations of it. Flex fuel, by the way, is just like a total load. It has to do with the ratio of gasoline and I think like ethanol or something you're burning. Ethanol, which is like incredibly inefficient and, where the ratio of the energy you get out of it as opposed to the energy it costs, the energy it takes to create it is like massively, wildly inefficient. It's like so much less efficient than any car you could possibly drive now. But then as Thomas Kill noted at the end, he said, so to distract people from that, they just put a green metallic leaf on the back of the car. It seems to work. Anyway, so the Volt, though, but the deal with this, though, is it's like a fully, it has the capability to run fully on electricity. I mean, it has a gas engine, but you can totally switch that off at some point, theoretically, when you're driving it, and it becomes an electric car for however long.
Yes. Fletcher says the automotive world likes the technology that combines battery power with gasoline power.
Volt has made an electric vehicle practical for today's infrastructure. And frankly, we think most consumers will be able to drive the Volt all electrically most of the time. But if you need to exceed the range capability of the battery, it's, you know, no worries and no issues for the consumer.
So then the gas basically becomes like a spare tire. Like if you're going on some long trip or something and you're not going to have enough electricity to get to go until the futuristic filling stations arrive.
But if you're doing your little, like going to the grocery store, driving around, driving, you know, to a close workplace, that sort of thing, you could use the battery for most of those things.
See, and here's the thing, and I know that it's tempting to disbelieve large corporations or oligarchies or whatever, and they say things when she says, like, well, the auto industry is very excited about an electric car, and people immediately roll their eyes and say, but see, the thing is, I instinctively believe that. The auto industry is absolutely in favor of that. Because they're in favor of whatever is going to get them money.
Yeah.
The petrochemical industry is probably not in favor of it. But this is great though, because this becomes like a sort of clash. This is like a Godzilla versus Mothra thing. Where on the one hand you have like Texaco and Mobil, but on the other hand you got like Ford and GM who have now divesting and divergent interests. They have interests that do not necessarily overlap. And so the auto industry is going to win this round.
It's like Mecha Godzilla versus Oil Godzilla.
It's exactly what it's like. Or like Godzilla versus the Smog Monster.
Right.
Which is an actual thing, by the way.
Yeah.
That's an actual Godzilla film.
Police are investigating a 57-year-old man for suspected cruelty to animals after discovering nearly 100 cats in his motorhome. Authorities said many of the cats were suffering from upper respiratory ailments, had mouth and facial abscesses, and ear deformities. The remains of several cats and kittens were also discovered wrapped in towels and placed plastic inside a freezer. Police responded, this was in the Los Angeles area, Panorama City. Police responded after previous complaints from animal rescue personnel, veterinarians, and neighbors who told them the man had refused medical care for the animals and was maintaining numerous cats inside his small residence, numerous being 100 in a motorhome. The LAPD is forwarding the cases to the LA City Attorney's Office to determine what legal action, if any, can be taken against him.
By the way, remember, was it when Eric was here? I think it was when you were here. We were talking about it was last Thursday. It was when Anna Griffin was here on the or it was on the Rick Emerson show, and she was talking about the story in the paper about the. You know, the women who occasionally will find baby raccoons and breastfeed them. It's a whole weird thing.
Yeah. But that story was published in the Oregonian on Saturday.
So do you remember me telling you about the girl who worked at CBS who would occasionally take a squirrel or two home with her?
Mm-hmm.
So I was talking to Cheryl, and Cheryl, we were talking about that woman, and Cheryl said, you know, she said, like, it wasn't a couple. She's like, at one point she had, like, 12 squirrels living at her home, and then also, like, 7 cats. I mean, I've never gone there, and so I don't know if everybody just got along swimmingly. But I guess at one point, though, she was, I shouldn't say inexplicably, because she's a nice girl, but she got married. And I guess for a while, though, before she and her husband moved in together, she, I think it's probably a way just to let him know what he was in for. Maybe that was subconsciously what she was after. She just told him that all the squirrels were going to live at his place. And so the squirrels, or the cats stayed with her, like 7 of them, but like the 12 squirrels or whatever, just went to live at her fiancé's home. And so that's an interesting life change. You know, that one day you're just some guy, you know, the next day you're a guy that has 12 squirrels living at your home because your crazy fiancé, is starting to acclimate them to their new surroundings. It's the strangest thing. And the thing is, she seems sort of outwardly normal. She's kind of got the crazy eyes, but so do lots of people. But she didn't seem nuts. I mean, she seemed, like, you know, relatively stable in most visible ways.
But she was a squirrel collector.
And then apparently found a guy who was willing to marry her, even though it meant 12 squirrels were going to move into his house.
And 7 cats.
Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing is, when you think about 12 squirrels moving into your home, it doesn't seem, in the grand scheme of things, that crazy. In other words, it's not like she's got a bunch of, like, dead Cub Scouts in, like, a trunk that she's got to bring with her, or that she's, you know, on a shooting spree somewhere in Arizona. But in its own small microcosmic way, having 12 squirrels that have got to move into your boyfriend's house, that is as crazy as it gets.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that is a harbinger. Is what that is.
Well, it's kind of the interesting story, I think, is him. That's not a deal breaker in any way.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
She must have had some other
some
really
sort of skill.
Sterling qualities.
She had some sort of upside that I was not familiar with.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Monday, January the 10th, 2011.
I know you'll be fascinated to hear that Denise Richards and Nikki Sixx have split after several weeks of dating.
Okay.
It's crazy how this is being made out to be some big breakup, said a source to Us Magazine. I could count on my hand how many times they went out. They decided to try it and she wasn't interested. That's dating. This isn't some big dramatic split.
Well, and also the whole, they were trying to make a big deal of it because I guess he is in recovery and she is allegedly still something of a wild girl from time to time. That's what I heard. And I say, as though I was like it, you know, Spago. But that was the whole thing. It's like, how is Nikki going to stay, you know, sober with, you know. But it's like the story had just passed into my head, and then moments later it just fell out again, and I completely forgot about it until this moment, finding out that it's done. So there you go.
Director Tim Burton was hospitalized last month to deal with his painful kidney stones. Tim has been ill for weeks, said a source to Britain's Mail on Sunday. He thought he would have an all-clear by Christmas, but the problem was ongoing. Burton is married to actress Helena Bonham Carter and attended a New Year's Eve party with British Prime Minister David Cameron in Buckinghamshire, England. And I guess his kidney stones went along for the ride as well. The Kardashians, who withdrew their support of a Kardashian-themed debit card after it attracted negative attention from a Connecticut attorney general, have been sued for at least $75 million by the card's company, Revenue Resource Group, LLC, according to the Fresno Bee. The company is claiming breach of contract after the Kardashians terminated their endorsement 3 weeks into an agreement after critics and legal authorities publicized fine print details that the card cost $99.95 to own for the first year and was weighted with heavy user fees. A spokesperson for the Kardashians did not immediately respond to a request.
Boy, you know, I got one of those Kardashian sisters was on she was on something the other day. She was on like TMZ or something, and that's a thing where it's like that is it takes all of science's assembled knowledge, and then also I think like a lot of really heavy duty construction of undergarments, and then the right camera angles and lighting, and somebody to like soft focus all of the lenses that they're being to make those girls look normal. I mean, Kim Kardashian does not, you know, she's not an unattractive woman. She, she kind of gets hit for being heavy sometimes or whatever. But I think she's, you know, she's far and away like the best looking of the three. That Khloe Kardashian, though, she is just like, it's like Goontown with her. She is flat out weird looking. She looks like some sort of weird experiment that's gone horribly awry.
They strike me as people that it's probably like an evolutionary plus for them that they don't have any apparent ability to do any deep self-analysis, because when you think that the entire reason that they are making money and are in the public eye is because one of the sisters made a sex tape. So it's kind of like if one of them actually took like 5 minutes to think about like the state of their life,
uh-huh,
and you know why and where they are, it would probably be so devastatingly depressing.
They would just sit at home in some sort of a weird paralytic state.
Yeah, but sort of like, you know, like poodles. They don't really seem to have any ability for self-analysis, so they just, you know, do their backflips, and
they have no sense of their own mortality,
yeah,
or their place in the grand scheme of,
yeah,
things.
So they get along just fine.
It's like that machine they put Zaphod Beeblebrox into, the Infinite Perspective Vortex, and it showed him his place in the galaxy. And it's like to break your mind by showing you how vastly unimportant you are. But they put him in, and he came out, and he's like, "Hey, I'm the most important thing in the galaxy. Awesome, let's get tea." And that's what that you get the sense that like that is their deal too.
Yes.
Also, this, by the way. Never mind. Screw it. I was going to talk more about the Kardashians, but really, again, this is like back on the Catholic Church thing. I opened my mouth to point out, like, I was going to point out a hypocrisy about the Kardashians. It's that they're anti, you know, they're anti fur nutcases. They're you know, they're on like the insane, like, you know, don't wear fur thing. Yet their clothing store filled with leather. So you know what leather is? Hairless fur.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
It's animal skin.
Yeah, it's that's really all it is. Fur is just leather with hair on it, so it's the same thing. Anyway, but it just seemed like it was not even worth the energy to point out, you know, moral failings of the Kardashian sisters.
Well, the thing is, I don't think they're very smart.
No, they're really not. See, this guy says, "Are you really wasting trillion-dollar technology deconstructing the Kardashians?" Shame. Sorry about that. Here's Don Taylor.
Well, we're pretty much done, aren't we? We're running out of time.
We got time for one more.
Okay. I've got nothing worth reading.
Really?
It's a problem. Everything's...
You don't have anything
really
that measures
boring.
Up to the level of the Kardashians?
No, not really. I was going to do that thing with Matt Damon talking about how enthusiastic he was about Jeff Bridges, but we probably really don't have time.
Well, we have time for that next hour.
Yeah.
Did you weren't here when we had the... it was Wednesday when we had Eric Snyder, when we had the Nicolas Cage soundbite about the Ghost Rider reboot he's doing.
I heard that, though. I was listening to
gold.
The show that day, though.
Gold is what that is. Just awesome.
Yeah, it's exciting. And I only wanted that because I really love the Ghost Rider.
But at a certain point, it's like he's just exhaling fruit flies that buzzed by your ears. All right.
Orlando Bloom and his wife had a kid on Thursday.
Okay. For a minute, you know, I thought you were going to say something about Orlando Jones, and I was going to be interested. But then you ended it with Bloom. He's a guy about whom I am singularly just nonplussed. I couldn't possibly care less about him. Okay.
Yeah. Glee creator Ryan Murphy said that online reports about the show doing a Justin Bieber tribute episode aren't true.
We're ending now. This has been Legion of News from high above the milk packing district in the heart of glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program featuring Ryan White from the Oregonian, also Corpse Watch, Penis Watch, Clergy Watch, and the Top 5. And it's all on the way next hour at rickemersonshow.com if you would like hours more of this scintillating entertainment. We come to you live each and every weekday from high atop the milk packing district here at the studios of the Emerson News Network, where at the news desk is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic is provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kenakoa. Thank you for listening. Be safe. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Enjoy your Monday, won't you?